welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last night's presidential debate was a fascinating look at the state of American democracy, but was there a winner? Our Dakota political junkies today are the University of South Dakota Professor of Political Science, Mike Card. Dr. Card, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. I'm pleased to be here.
Also with us, former South Dakota State Senator Tom Dempster. Hey, Tom, welcome back.
Delighted to be here.
All right, let's start with the debate, and I suppose we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the tone, which I think, unless you have been living under a rock for the last 24 hours, you know was a bit filled with interruptions, shall we say. So let's talk about the tone of this debate. Was it historic in the sense of how it unfolded? Mike Card, let's start with you.
Well, I've probably watched 20 presidential debates in my life, and I've never seen anything quite like that. I received several tweets from people asking if a kindergarten teacher shouldn't be our next moderator because they know how to deal with name calling and bullying.
Tom, your thoughts on the historic nature of how things unfolded from a tone or a process or following the rules standpoint?
Well, Lori, I was helped to grow up by having the pleasure of spending 8 years in the South Dakota Senate. And one of the things, there are rules of procedure and rules of decorum on the Senate floor. And I've come to believe, especially in the past 4 years, that without those rules, without that decorum, democracy ultimately is destroyed. I just happened to finish a book and then developed a checklist as a result of it. I happened to finish a book entitled Demagogue for President, The Rhetorical Genius of Donald Trump, written by a professor in rhetorics or in rhetoric. And as I went through the book, you could pretty much anticipate like Crooked Hillary. That's not an attack on Hillary. That's an attack on the Democratic Party. It's an attack against the person. And so I kept thinking, what should be done if there is yet a predictable attack against the person? And remember Little Marco the Lightweight, remember lying Ted Cruz? And I anticipated someone to say, well, crazy Joe Biden. Well, the response to that, as I have in my checklist, is a smile. And we saw that last night. And a response something like, well, Mr. President, he didn't say this, but well, Mr. President, I am crazy. I'm crazy to tell the truth. I'm crazy to lead America so that it can fulfill its dreams. I'm crazy on this policy and that policy. Last night was the first time that I'd ever heard in my life someone call a president a clown and a liar, have it not disputed, but saying it with a smile.
Mike Card, I want to ask the question, whose fault was it? And I know that's the wrong question to ask, but I want to get at the, what happened? Is it the moderator's responsibility to enforce those rules? Was it the president to behave differently? Was it the vice president, Joe Biden, to behave differently? Did everybody just fall apart? Because I think that it's an important question, Mike Card, because what I don't want to see happen, which I'm seeing happen on Twitter a lot, is a lot of people just saying, well, that was an old man, slap fest, or that was just kind of throwing the whole campaign and the whole process of democracy and debate into the trash can and say, that's over. And I think it's important to not look for fault, but to look for, what went wrong and when, and who is driving that dissent. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, I do. And one of the things that I'd like to do is to say I think debates are useful. The debates started out as speeches well before television and radio, but they're a ritual of democracy. And from these, we find out what the person stands for, how they're going to act in a contemporaneous manner. We see that people have, the candidates and their campaign team have a deadline by which they have to make choices about positions and priorities. And that means they have to exclude certain groups. In a sense, the debate format matters greatly, and whether we have an actual debate or we have people presenting their own opinions and perspectives is a very different matter. It's interesting that the Commission on the Presidential Debates gets both of the candidates' teams together, and they agree upon a set of rules. And the moderator, Mr. Wallace, noted that, and that lasted for a little while as he did his best to tell the president to obey the rules that his team had obeyed, had agreed to. But this is a format that allows the president great benefit in terms of transmitting ideas without a lot of detail. A town hall format would benefit Joe Biden a lot more. I don't know if that's what you're looking for a response.
I want to talk to that point beyond the tone, which is we kind of know through most of the debate what they were against and the barbs that they threw and the insults and the name calling, as Tom mentioned. But what are they for? What stood out from a policy standpoint to you that said, we know that this presidential candidate came out strong saying, I am for this. I am the this candidate. Tom, what do you remember from President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden about what they're for in this election?
Well, trying to stop a steamroller, particularly when you're at a microphone, is probably all but impossible. Ideas don't seem to matter much when you're opposing a steamroller. Somehow you've got to stand up and speak to the American people, and I think that's where former Vice President Biden, I think, was most effective when he tried to say, I don't care about all of this, but what I do care about is you. We've seen this now for the past 4 years where there is no truth other than my truth. My wife, I don't think this answered your question, Lori, but my wife had an idea last night, and that is that the moderator ought to have a switch on the microphone. And when the rules of debate and the rules of decorum get violated, boom, throw the switch.
Mike, did you have a sense of what these candidates were for?
Well, we saw more about what they're not for and trying to pin the other person somewhat on the perspective of being for something that's objectionable. And whether that's, the president trying to tell the audience that Joe Biden isn't for law and order, yet moments before suggesting that his sponsorship of the crime bill in 1994 was a problem. There are contradictory messages that it's difficult to sort through all of this. Yeah. I think the thing that stuck out for me the most was that the president would not condemn white supremacy.
So if you didn't watch, there was moment when Chris Wallace from Fox News, the moderator, asked that question, are you prepared, Mr. President, to condemn white supremacy? And he hesitated, and there was a sort of I missed it. I was like, I heard it. I heard what I thought I heard. And then I had to go back and listen to the tape the next day. But the president was like, yes, what do you want me to say? And but we'll say it. And then he said to the Proud Boys, which is a known white supremacist group, stand by, stand back, and stand by, which many people have since pointed out is not exactly a condemnation of white supremacy. Stand back and stand by. Why? And then yet we had the president saying to Joe Biden, you refuse to say law and order, you refuse to say law and order, which clearly Joe Biden said several times. So this whole idea of of what you will refuse to say and what you will say, and what corner will you, you know, will you promise to obey the results of the election and accept the results of the election? The president also wouldn't agree to that. But what do we learn about this president in those moments, Tom? And do we learn beyond that he's unwilling to condemn? What do we learn about the president, Tom Dempster? You just read a book on rhetoric. So.
Yeah, I did. And one of the most effective techniques that she points out in the book is the use of paralipsis. Obviously a new word, to me. But Lori, I don't know if you know this, but I've heard so many things say people about you. I mean, I don't think that they're true, but if that's true, Lori, why are so many people saying them? And it gives you the ability to say something without saying it, but most importantly, not taking responsibility for what you just said. Mm-hmm. And particularly in this issue, the president has used paralipsis over and over and over again and says, I'm making an appeal to these people because I know they're going to vote for me, but I certainly don't want to say that openly, nor do I want to take responsibility for what I'm saying. I'm saying, but I'm not saying. Very effective technique.
Hmm. Yeah, the use of the phrase, some people say, is, and then fill in the blank, which is an example of what Tom is saying.
That's interesting.
I've just.
We should put that on the bingo card. Some people say. And that's not true. Should have been on that.
Well, Lori, I've been hearing all these things about you.
I hope they're good.
Well, they are. There's no doubt about that.
So there was also this moment where the president said, when we're talking about law and order, where he listed, you know, that every law enforcement organization is, you know, basically endorsing him. And there was a moment where he used silence effectively, I thought, where he said, you know, where Joe Biden said, basically, I have, you know, some support from law enforcement. And the president said, name them who. And there was, you know, a 5-second pause where you were left wondering, you know, are there law enforcement organizations who are endorsing and supporting Vice President Joe Biden for his candidacy? That was a moment where silence was used. There weren't too many moments where silence was used, I have to say. The COVID-19 crisis, clearly, when I think of what these candidates said they were for, it seems like Joe Biden came out pretty strongly on that he was for a more effective federal response to this virus as a way of moving this country forward. Mike, do you think he did an effective job of making the case that this president has failed in that regard and doesn't understand the human cost of that failure? Was he successful in that cause?
Well, it depends upon which audience you're speaking of. I don't know that in my 60 years that I've seen an example of our population that is so split and so much confirmation bias that we hear things that confirm our previously held beliefs. Mm-hmm. I think for the president's team and those who are committed to him, they heard that the president made a convincing case that he has handled the coronavirus and COVID-19 as well as could be done from the Chinese scourge or whatever word he used. And I suspect that they didn't hear a word of former Vice President Biden's statement to the same effect of what we need is a consolidated federal response rather than telling the states that they're on their own. Rather than forcing states to, for lack of a better term, kiss up to the president in order to get personal protective equipment in March and April. I don't think the other side even hears what the other side is saying.
Hmm. Let's talk about the end of that debate and whether or not the results would be accepted by this president. And specifically, I want to talk about polling numbers and whether he thinks, is this how a candidate who thinks he's going to win speaks? And that, I guess that's the broader question of, is what can we tell about the Trump campaign right now, if anything, based on, I mean, is this Donald Trump just being Donald Trump, or is this Donald Trump trying to lay the groundwork for, I've seen the numbers and I want to cast doubt in people's minds? Speculation, obviously. But Tom, what did you think about the end of that debate during that moment when Wallace was trying to get the president to say whether or not he would accept the results and leave office if necessary?
Well, I mean, we've seen this over and over again, where nothing is the truth and everything is the truth. Mm-hmm. Or you can't believe anybody, you've got to believe everybody. But where you've got conspiracy theory, there certainly is conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, again, to throw water on any respected part of society, on anything where people look to get the truth. I'm going to do anything and everything that I have to do in order to represent you, even if that means my lying, even if that means my not respecting the institution of democracy and accepting a loss. I'll do anything and everything that it takes. It is unsettling.
Dr. Card, yeah, anything you want to add to that? Yeah.
Well, I think the major loss for the country is we are in a period of win at all costs. And whether that dealt with an impeachment or an impeachment defense, or whether it deals with the appointment of a Supreme Court justice and or the nomination, or whether it deals with the truth, as Tom is suggesting. It's sort of like, I don't care what the consequences are, I just need to win. And I think that is beginning to overtake our society. And that's the most frightening aspect for me, is democracy in the country should come first. But that's my opinion. And that doesn't seem to be shared at a national level. You know, if this is how we want our children to behave, I'm glad I'm 60 and have only 25 or so years to go.
What it does do for sure is showing what many scholars have talked over and over again, is how fragile our democracy, how fragile any democracy is, and how much institutions have to be revered, respected, and followed.
Democracy is not on autopilot.
How many deaths? How many people have died to make that statement true, Lori?
Yeah. What can we do before we let we go? And we're gonna roll a You and Your Democracy conversation that Chuck Parkinson hosted here in just a minute, which I think will expand on this question a little bit. So we don't have to answer it completely right now. But clearly, you know, the election is November 3rd. Everybody, early voting, absentee voting is ongoing now here in South Dakota. You do need to register to vote if you have not done so by October 19th. So we know that we can vote for our local representatives and for the president this year. We know our votes matter and mean something. What else can we do as we look and bemoan and wring our hands about the current state of democracy to claim it a little bit more for what it means in the United States of America and in our lives? Tom, you first.
In South Dakota, whether it be with members of the legislature, whether it be with members of the city council, whether it be with county commissioners, if you don't know them and if you haven't talked to them, call them. Know for whom you're voting.
Mike Card?
I think that's the same thing, that we probably need to focus more on our local politics, and that is local as in municipality, county commissioners, township boards of trustees, state legislators. You know, we're a small enough state that you can call somebody up and tell them what you're interested in and even ask them what they think about a particular issue. And most legislators, and Tom can speak to this better than I can, get very few notes from actual constituents. They get a lot of notes from interest groups and members of interest groups, but they don't hear much from their actual constituents as to how to vote. But again, it's let's focus on the local, and because there isn't much we can do to deal with the national situation except to take care of what we can influence ourselves, and that is our local elections, find out who your candidates are, what they stand for, and you'll find a lot about them. And party differences may not be as great as they are at the national level, because we're dealing with real people as opposed to characters on a stage that are trying to impress us.
Yeah, we can expect better here at home, and we can tell our neighbors to rise to that occasion. Look how infrequently we interrupted one another today, and no one got called a clown. So democracy in action. Indeed. Tom Debster, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Mike,
You're
thanks as
welcome.
Well. Mike Card, thanks as well.
Well, thanks, Lori. Thank you, Tom. And it's a good thing we're not on video because I'm in clown face.
Well, that changes everything. All right.